You're listening to the Workplace Wellbeing Podcast, discussing the future of employee wellbeing.
Hi, and welcome to the Workplace Wellbeing Podcast. I'm Ian Hogg, Chairman of FastPay, and today I'm very pleased to be joined by Gracious Musariri, who's recently been a member of the NHS team working to develop a wellbeing programme which aims to improve the experience of people at work and build resilience amongst NHS workers. A trained mental health nurse, Gracious has now launched Empolo, a consultancy which aims to help employers improve the mental wellbeing of their teams. Empolo aims to do this through evidence-based workshops and reflective practice. This is a subject close to the heart of the Workplace Wellbeing Podcast, and I'm sure all of our listeners will be keen to support Gracious in her new project. On today's podcast, I want to discuss some of the work the NHS has been doing around building resilience in the last year, and then move on to discussing how that experience can be used to improve wellbeing in the private sector. Hi, Gracious. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Ian. Thanks so much for having me.
No, you're welcome. Do you know what? I think it'd be a great place to start is if you just, took the listeners through a bit about your background and how you came to start Empolo.
Okay, absolutely. So the idea for Empolo was actually conceived in 2017 when I'd qualified as a mental health nurse and I was working on a busy acute ward in South London. And I mean, generally, we have patients being admitted or clients being admitted with various kind of social circumstances, which kind of precipitate poor mental health. One of the common issues or social factors was work, and of course, other factors such as finances. But there was one particular situation which made me think more about the issues of mental health in the workplace. And I'd met a client who I was working very closely with who had experienced a very difficult and traumatic time and actually was experiencing their first episode of bipolar disorder. As a result, or one of the leading factors which caused this was workplace stress. And in working with the client, I started to learn more about the issues in the workplace, how mental health wasn't something that was openly discussed. And as we were kind of coming towards the end of the client's recovery and thinking about discharge, going back home, one of the main stresses and worries were, when I go back to work, how will I be perceived? How would this affect my job? How will it affect how my colleagues see me? Will I be demoted or will it affect my opportunity to progress? So all of those things were coming up and it just made me realize that perhaps there was a way to go in terms of improving mental health in the workplace, just awareness, reducing and destigmatizing mental health, and just allowing people to feel comfortable to talk about their mental health and to seek support within the workplace. Preventing something that could be very kind of serious and even the point of hospital admission. So that's where Empolo kind of came from. And since then, since then I've just kind of been doing a lot more research into workplace wellbeing. And yeah, I've kind of just sort of started. In 2018, I looked into developing an app called SafeFace, which was basically a therapy-based app. And I went through kind of an accelerator program. And then from there on, I didn't manage to go so far. But then since then, I've kind of focused on Empolo being a consultancy that goes within the workplace, works with people, supports people in a face-to-face manner.
Listen, Gracious, what you're saying is that you've been on the receiving end of speaking to people that have suffered from really bad practice at work, and that experience is probably invaluable because a lot of employers, they're trying to manage this situation. They're coming to it late. I think you it sounds like you spotted that. A lot of employers have ignored the subject for too long, I think. But also they've got no expertise. They find it difficult to have the conversations with people who've suffered with mental health issues. But you've obviously been on the receiving end of lots of conversations with clients and patients.
Absolutely, yeah. And, it just kind of highlighted the issues of you know, the stigma still surrounding mental health and how some employers and managers don't feel so comfortable to talk about mental health as they do to talk about physical health. So, yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully it's improving, you know, and hopefully we're helping that journey. I'd love to talk more about your experience, you know, recently in the NHS. So as a rule on the podcast, I've tried to avoid COVID because otherwise it dominates all conversations. Not that it's not important, it's obviously massively important, but, you know, we've tried to sort of to avoid going into too much detail, but I think we can definitely make an exception here. So I'm sure a lot of people have read about issues such as PTSD and high stress levels for frontline workers. Can you talk us a bit more about the experience you gained in the last year and, you know, working with the NHS and how that can help you when, you know, moving into the private sector?
Yeah, absolutely. So just to take it back to pre-COVID, you know, NHS workers were already at quite high risk of poor mental health due to issues such as the trauma experienced on a day-to-day basis, kind of dealing with death, dealing with really difficult situations and breaking bad news on a regular basis. Things such as violence and aggression against staff in the NHS, the demand and the long hours that they work, issues such as compassion fatigue, which requires, you know, NHS workforce to really just give their empathy and their emotions constantly throughout work. And then we'll look at COVID. During COVID, I mean, that was kind of exacerbated, you know, it's kind of exaggerated all of the issues that people are experiencing. And just, I mean, looking at, say, the issues such as inadequate PPE, you know, people didn't have adequate PPE, isolation from family, burnout, because the demand increased even more during the peak of COVID. I mean, when the first wave started, people were working longer hours because we just, you know, staff needed to be there on the front line. And some staff were kind of working, coming off from sick leave and then kind of having to return to work immediately after. And that was having major impacts on physical and mental well-being. And one of the studies, which was done actually in January by the Nursing Times, looked into the impact of the first wave of COVID-19. And they found that there was an increase in post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, anxiety and depression from the first wave. And they predicted that this was actually going to continue increasing as time goes on. Reason being, all of these factors that we've kind of mentioned and, you know, dealing with more traumatic issues, kind of having to move patients really quickly in and out, people, you know, patients having really difficult situations, having to support family members who aren't able to see their relatives whilst in hospital, the nursing, you know, NHS workforce were the ones that were kind of a buffer and expected to support not only the patients, but to support family members as well, whilst also experiencing this really traumatic kind of situation. So it's definitely having an impact on the mental, you know, NHS workforce in terms of their mental health and well-being. However, I think there's been a lot of shine light shone on this. And, you know, I know the NHS are doing a lot. Our team is doing a lot to consider, you know, what can we do to support the NHS workforce, talking about resilience, thinking about naturally healthcare workers are expected or encouraged to be resilient. And, you know, it's also looking at saying, okay, it's not your responsibility to take that to be resilient, you know, it's not a personal responsibility. We should think about how the organization can support you in, you know, building resilience, in, you know, managing your mental health and well-being. And it's saying it's not okay for, you know, to expect staff to just carry on and keep going, even though, just because they are, you know, the NHS workforce. So I think that's kind of been the focus, to kind of take that responsibility from the person and kind of shifting it and saying, we're sharing that responsibility with you as an organization. Here is what we want to do to support you. So yeah, that's kind of been the main area of focus.
No, listen, that's you know, fascinating. I think, you know, one of the things that I presume was a challenge was, you know, there's a massive crisis on, you know, there were stories of, you know, every bed, every ICU being used. Where did they, you know, where did the NHS find time to concentrate on this? Because I would imagine, you know, the pressure is to focus on the crisis and there's not the free time to have, you know, workshops or, you know, training sessions because, you know, a bit all hands to the pump. Was that a challenge?
Absolutely, yeah. I think, like you're saying, that the focus was and always is, you know, the National Health Service is to serve the public and to help people first and foremost. So even interestingly, actually, there were a lot of kind of voluntary organizations, people volunteering time to support in terms of offering kind of yoga sessions, offering kind of workshops, kind of just to help the workforce, even free food being donated. These were all initiatives that, you know, people came together to bring. But there was still that issue of, you know, people not having time, especially if you're on the front line and you're working on a busy A&E or acute ward, you wouldn't really have time to engage in those initiatives. So I think as during the time of COVID, when things were at the peak, it was very difficult to engage the workforce in kind of talking about, let's look after yourself. How can we look after you? But as we move forward, I think there is going to be a lot more time set aside. And, you know, there's a lot of work that, you know, even my team are thinking about, you know, are working on in order to encourage people to prioritize their mental well-being going forward. And, you know, this is beyond COVID. We're kind of thinking about how can we shift that within healthcare workers and just say, it's okay to seek support. It's okay to, you know, to go to your manager and say, you know, today's been a really difficult day. I've dealt with A, B, C, D, and I need some support. So going forward, I think it's going to make a lot of change and have a big impact. And yeah, essentially,
I mean, another thing that I've read, which I'm sure is true, is that, you know, there's a big backlog of sort of non-COVID related work for the NHS. So the people that have worked very hard for the last year, as we mercifully, as it sort of seems to be coming to an end on the COVID front, you know, they're not going to get any rest, are they? That your NHS colleagues, there's a whole backlog of work, and there's, you know, pressure's going to be coming on to clear the sort of, you know, the wait lists. So do you think that the stress will be maintained through that period, or do you think that just getting rid of COVID, which was exceptional, will naturally make things easier for your NHS colleagues?
That's a very good question. And I think to some degree, like you say, COVID was exceptional and it was something that was very traumatizing for the whole nation. And I think coming to the end of that will naturally have a positive impact on the workforce itself and the general public. And I think that will definitely uplift the spirits of the NHS workforce. However, yes, there is still a lot of, you know, work to be done in the sense of, you know, there is a huge backlog. There are appointments and, you know, people needing to be seen that were kind of pushed back, and there is going to be a huge need to kind of really support people as COVID kind of ends. But I think there are already a lot of workforce plans being put into place, and I know the NHS is working very hard to recruit more people and to try and make sure that you know, burden isn't so heavy on the NHS workforce and that there is enough support. So I think as we move out, hopefully we can only hope that, you know, people will be able to manage the workload coming and to be able to support patients, you know, sufficiently and also, yeah, managing.
Yeah, I'd be keen to hear what sort of, you know, methods and tools you've used to sort of try and work with the teams. You know, is it you're working with managers, or are you working with individual, you know, team members and colleagues? You know, what sort of things are you doing? Workshops? Are you you just doing training sessions? What sort of things are the NHS putting in place on a practical day-to-day level?
The thing is, our team, we're working on a stress and resilience model. This has been going on for several years, actually, and it's essentially at the stage where they're piloting the model and working with some NHS trusts to see if they can implement it across the hospitals. And the model is basically focused on looking at the different ways or the different kind of levels related to the mind and mental health and implementing that or aligning that with the workplace, with the workforce. So essentially, it's a guide which managers will be expected to use or encouraged to use in the workplace. But it's also something that employees on the front line can also use to support and to understand how their mental health relates to the work that they do. In the NHS, there are kind of sessions such as reflective practice, which I think has improved, especially around the mental health workforce. So reflective practice is essentially bringing together a team, whether it's a small team or a big team, and having a facilitator who is a qualified professional or someone who is able to prompt certain questions or certain issues. For example, if, you know, COVID is an issue that's really causing a lot of major impact within a team, would explore that and would talk about that, and it'll kind of be an open space to encourage people to kind of share their feelings, share what's going on, the struggles that they're having, as well as the good practice, things that they've seen that are positive, and being able to take that forward, and colleagues kind of using that as a space for empowerment, and a space to connect as well with their colleagues, in a safe way, where people can share exactly what they're thinking and how they're, you know, feeling without fear of, you know, being judged or anything like that. So those are just some of the things that we're able to do.
Okay. And now you're moving on to the private sector. What problem are you looking to solve with MPLO?
I think the main thing for me, I mean, with MPLO, it's MPLO wants to help people and organizations to continue to push kind of mental health to the top of the corporate agenda. As you said, during COVID and even before that, companies were becoming more aware of the need to have mental health initiatives in the workplace. So MPLO kind of wants to bring evidence-based kind of mental health promotion activities, mental health promotion strategies into the workplace. And these are lessons learned from working within the NHS, lessons learned from kind of research and studying. For example, like I've mentioned, the reflective practice workshops, and it's to engage people at all levels. So not just thinking about engaging people at an individual level, but also thinking about the group level / team, and also thinking about leadership, engaging the leaders within the workplace, and also engaging the organization as a whole. And thinking about, like I'm saying, the corporate agenda, thinking about making sure that mental health is part of the organization and it's a priority for organizations. So the way in which we want to do that is to kind of just engage employees, engage people, and empower them by kind of allowing them to have input into the workshops that we deliver, and we'll do that through kind of feedback from employees.
Okay. And if I'm an employer, you know, I'm looking to improve the mental well-being of my team, how would I start with you? What's the sort of, you know, what does it look like at the beginning? Do we sit down and plan a strategy, or are you working with people that have already got a strategy and you're just filling one part of that?
Okay, so we kind of cover both ways. So one element, we cover people who, or we support people who already have a strategy in place, and we offer the workshops, we offer kind of sessions. However, on the other side, we can say if people are starting from scratch and they don't, you know, have a strategy and they don't know exactly how they want mental health support to look in their workplace, we'll take them through the journey and we support them through that. So essentially, we would kind of organize a meeting with all kind of a session where we can sit down and plan what is important within the organization, what are the key issues within the organization. We focus very heavily on feedback, and that's part of engaging everyone at different levels. So we would work through kind of a survey / questionnaire, even including focus groups, to basically get that qualitative information to be able to understand what are the needs and where are the gaps within kind of understanding mental health or even mental health support within the workplace. And then working with people within the organization to kind of support them and to meet those needs and cover those gaps. And on an ongoing basis, we'll continue to work with feedback from employees, colleagues within the workplace, managers, people at different levels, just to really understand is what we're doing working. So the things that we would implement would be kind of these kind of workshops and activities. For example, if we're thinking about engaging people at an individual level, thinking about the employee, we would think about self-directed learning. So having workshops where people can really understand how to support or manage them, certain issues such as stress or the relationship between stress and what it can do, long-term stress can do, the effects of burnout. So really understanding that and sharing that with employees at an individual level. And then we think about perhaps working with employees in a team or a group. And then that's where workshops or kind of evidence-based practice such as reflective practice will be useful, because it's getting people together as a team, talking about certain issues within the workplace, and it's expanding to issues such as diversity issues, things that go on in the workplace that maybe people wouldn't kind of feel comfortable approaching their manager about, but being in an open space where they can talk about it with their team, perhaps evidence kind of proves that people are more likely to open up and to speak freely, and they have therapeutic benefit from sharing. And then even just leadership level, you can think about storytelling, supporting leaders and people within the organization to share stories in a positive way. And there's also evidence based on that to say personal storytelling has kind of serious benefits on connecting people within the workplace and encouraging people to also seek support and to encourage people to kind of to seek the support for their well-being.
When you talk about storytelling, do you mean like as a manager, I might tell my team that, I previously had an issue or, suffered from a well-being, a mental well-being problem? Or what do you mean by storytelling?
Yeah, exactly that, Ian. It's essentially sharing your experiences, and, it can just be about an experience that you've had and how you've dealt with that. And it's also the purpose of sharing stories and sharing experiences, I think, is to normalize the fact that, people do go through difficult times and difficult experiences. And it's allowing, as a leader, it encourages and promotes, connection with your colleagues as well, and thinking about kind of encouraging people can then reflect and relate to the situation that you've had. And it almost makes it okay to say, actually, such and such has experienced this. So it's not just myself going through this, or it's not just me. I'm not alone. I can seek support. If someone has experienced this, then surely they're able to empathize and understand. Essentially is sharing personal stories and personal experiences of mental and physical health, anything relating to the well-being of an individual, and just, being open and honest.
No, excellent. I think that's a great explanation. Listen, Gracious, I think, we can, just listening to you, you've obviously, got a wealth of experience and value to share with employers in the private sector. Hopefully they're not going through the same levels of stress that you've experienced or witnessed in the last year. And hopefully none of us ever have to go through that level of stress. But if an employer wants to get in touch and take advantage of all your expertise, what's your preferred method? How do they get in touch?
Yeah, I mean, any employers and companies can reach out to us on our website. So it's spelled empylo.com, and you can book a discovery call, and we can kind of talk through what it is you need or want in terms of mental health and well-being support within your organization. Or you can find us on LinkedIn, Empylo, and Twitter, it's Empylo as well. Or you can email directly at team@empylo.com. And my personal LinkedIn account is Gracious Masariri. So
Perfect. I'll put all those links in the program notes so people can follow the links, and hopefully people will be getting in touch with you off the back of this, Gracious. Just before I let you go, though, there's one question I ask all our guests, and it's what book or media is giving you most inspiration at the moment?
Oh, okay. I think the book that's giving me inspiration, I have a book and a podcast. Can I do two?
Yeah, you can. Yeah, we'll let you.
So, okay, awesome. So the book that's giving me inspiration at the moment is called The Almanac of Naval Ravikant, A Guide to Wealth and Happiness. And in this, he just kind of talks about wealth being kind of looking at life in a positive way, wealth being beyond just kind of finance or anything like that, and talking about kind of, yeah, just looking at, you know, happiness, spiritual growth, physical, you know, all kinds of areas of life. And then podcast for me would be On Purpose with Jay Shetty. I've been listening to that for several years, and yeah, it's just a fantastic podcast.
Oh, I shall take that recommendation. Fine. So we'll put those links into the program notes as well. And yeah, hopefully people will be inspired by those as well. Listen, Gracious, thank you very much. It's a fascinating story, and I'm sure everybody's wishes you well in your new venture. For everybody else, thanks for listening. And please, you know, if you enjoyed the episode, please subscribe to Workplace Wellbeing on your favorite podcast app. Thank you very much.
Thank you.